Welcome to All Analytics Conversations. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. Today we're discussing where fun and games meet up with big business. Author, educator, and analytics thought leader Tom Davenport is with us to discuss how analytics are changing the business of big-time sports. The actual games that we see in a stadium or on TV are only the end result of the sports business. From managing salaries to marketing and optimizing ticket revenues, analytics are playing a big role in pro sports. And don't forget all those major college football and basketball programs. There's a lot of money at stake for universities in their leagues. So today we're talking about the business of sports and also, you know, what your own organization can learn from the use of analytics in these high-profile businesses that we call games. Before we get into the discussion, let me add a note for the listeners. We welcome your questions and comments on the chat board below. We will address as many as we can on the air and then more on the text chat board when the audio segment ends, when Tom hangs around for a little while with us. To get the discussion started, I invite listeners to introduce themselves to their peers on the chat board and perhaps share their own observation on how analytics are changing sports and maybe what you have learned yourself from your favorite teams. So we're pleased to have Tom Davenport with us today. Tom is highly respected throughout the analytics community as an educator in his roles with Babson College and other schools, and as author of books such as Big Data at Work and Competing on Analytics, and his new book coming out soon, Only Humans Need Apply. Welcome back, Tom. How are you today?
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
To start off, what are some of the innovative ways that you see sports organizations using analytics these days?
Well, in a way, I think it mirrors what happens in business. Certain aspects of sports are ahead of businesses, I would say. Certain aspects are behind businesses. So, from a business and marketing perspective, sports analytics are generally behind businesses, but catching up and adopting some of the principles that they've employed. But from a, a human resource management perspective, sports tend to be more advanced and sophisticated than businesses, and businesses should really, I think, focus on, what can we adopt from sports in terms of how we evaluate people and learn when they're most effective and so on. So, just to give you an example, in basketball, for example, the one of the dominant approaches that's been used for a number of years is so-called plus-minus analysis, which evaluates individual players and combinations of players in terms of how does the team perform when they're on the court and when they're off the court. And, you make comparisons so you can decide what's the optimal lineup under different circumstances. And that, I think, has not really been broadly adopted by businesses, although you could, clearly the same sorts of interaction effects of managers would be relevant to businesses, and we probably should evaluate top management teams in terms of how the organization performs when they're, sort of on and off the court. One other lesson that I think is really moving more from business to sports is the whole idea of personalization. So we, of course, had very detailed player performance figures of their how they do an entire game. Again, take basketball. You can find out how many rebounds they got and how many points they scored and how many assists they gave and so on. But now that's being combined with, you'd call it geographical data on different locations around the court. And a player might be told that, if you're going to shoot three-pointers, you should do it from the baseline rather than further out toward the middle of the court because your performance is much higher there. So starting to be able to give individualized offense and defense recommendations to players based on different parts of the court. And so that's been a substantial advance in basketball over the last several years. And I think we'll see that as well in football, because we're starting to have lots of video data and other sensor type of data in football, basketball, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer. Every player in the U.S. is wearing a sensor to tell you where they are on the court at any given time. So massive amounts of data that need to be analyzed and made sense of, and lots of opportunities for analytics.
I guess if you're paying somebody $20 million a year, you want to make sure you know what they're good at and where they're good at it.
Well, that is the motivation in sports, although, as you know, we sometimes pay CEOs $20 million a year, but we don't evaluate them with quite the same level of rigor that we would a quarterback or a really good center fielder or something like that.
Let's just compare with a couple years ago in looking at the business use of analytics within sports organizations. Has there been a dramatic increase in the number of organizations, do you think, that are relying on analytics?
Well, I wouldn't call it dramatic. I mean, in certain aspects, I suppose it's relatively dramatic. Almost every Major League Baseball team, for example, now has some degree of analytical sophistication in their ticket pricing. And most are really oriented to, quote, variable pricing, which, charges different prices for different games depending on the opponent and whether their historical rivalries. Red Sox-Yankees games tend to be more expensive than Red Sox-Blue Jays games, for example. A more sophisticated form of that is dynamic pricing, where the ticket price changes throughout the season. And, as the pennant race tightens up and our team is a competitor, we'll raise prices because fans are obviously more interested in that. And some teams actually do dynamic pricing of things like sodas and other food items at concession stands. But almost everybody has that now. They didn't have it a decade ago, so I guess you could say that's pretty dramatic. But as I suggested earlier, I think business analytics in sports do lag business analytics in business. And, we've had optimized pricing for airline tickets for 25 years or so now, and a lot, many more prices to choose from in airlines than in sports games. So there aren't too many areas of business analytics where sports leads other industries, I wouldn't say, but they are definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that ticket optimization or revenue optimization, it's amazing that it took that long to catch on. I mean, American Airlines came out with this in the late 70s, probably?
70s, I think. Yeah.
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 With the Sabre program.
Exactly. And it, sort of saved their bacon. The story is that, People Express was on the scene in those days and was lowering ticket prices dramatically, and only through pricing optimization or revenue management, as you refer to it, was American able to sort of stave them off and eventually put them out of business. So, it's been very valuable. I have always argued that if you want to make money with analytics, that pricing is a great place to start. But, sports is a pretty traditional realm of society. And I was talking about this the other day with someone relative to robot that would call balls and strikes in baseball. And while this makes perfect sense, and you can watch any sort of major league telecast now and see that we have basically machines that can tell whether balls are in the strike zone or not, and they're shown after almost every pitch, it's a pretty traditional sport, and we're probably not going to see that anytime soon, although it'd certainly be possible.
Now, in the organizations that are innovative, who's driving the analytics? Is it the ownership group, or is it more like a skunkworks operation that's leading the way?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I think in the most effective organizations, both on the player performance side and on the business side, you have a high degree of alignment between the senior management and the people doing the analytical work, and in player performance analytics, the people on the front lines, the coach or manager. So you really want everybody to be lined up with this sort of thing. One of the challenges, I think, for sports is that the business analytics activities are kind of perceived as the second-class citizen in the organization. People care more, and perhaps this is understandable, people care more about analytics for winning games than they do about making money. And so the people who do the business analytics work day to day sometimes feel a little bit like stepchildren. I think a better approach to structuring this, and there are a few teams that do that, including the Orlando Magic and the Phoenix Suns, they have one group that does all the analytics, and one day you might be working on analytics for the draft. The next day you might be trying to evaluate the effectiveness of different types of plays on the basketball court. And the next day you might be working on a revenue management application. So I think just as in a business enterprise, the fact that you have this larger critical mass and you can kind of move people around keeps things interesting. You can import some new approaches that you might not be aware of if you only stayed in one domain. And I think it's a good practice, but it's not terribly common yet.
Yeah, because that makes sense, and that's how you learn the business and what the challenges are.
Yeah, exactly. There is a real romance around the player performance analytics, and these people, flock every year to the MIT Sports Analytics Conference and so on. The business analytics side is not quite as romantic, although, it's still probably more romantic to do revenue management, ticket pricing optimization for major league sports team than it is to do it for an airline or a hotel.
Now, this is kind of surprising that they haven't been more innovative, given the fact that these teams are owned by billionaires who made their fortunes, for the most part, outside of sports. And is it just that they become fanboys and they lose perspective when it comes to the business because they want their toys on the field?
Yeah, that's I think a good observation that most people don't buy one of these teams in order to make a lot more money. Now, it has turned out that major league franchises have grown in value considerably in almost every sport. The NHL, National Hockey League, is a bit of an exception, but in general, you've seen values appreciate, far faster than most of these millionaire and billionaires' other investments. But that's not generally the reason why people buy a sports team. They buy it to, spend money, not make money. And as you suggest, many of them are very comfortable and don't need to make money. And so I think that's probably a factor. It's interesting. My favorite baseball team, the Red Sox, is owned by a former commodities trader, a very quantitative commodities trader, John Henry. And he has been, I think, very supportive of the on-field analytics oriented work and the scouting analytics work and so on, and brought in experts like Bill James to help with that. But I don't think they've had the same, quite the same level of sophistication on the business analytics side. You know, they're not without it totally, but they're not quite as aggressive in, on the business side. And you'd think that someone like John Henry would have been very supportive of that.
And some of us who are who follow that team also know that they finished last with their analytics in the past last 2 years.
Yes, but we have to remember that they won the World Series the previous year and three times in the last 12 years. So their you know, optimism is still running high at spring training, of course. Yeah, it's a bit of a puzzle. And for a while there was some talk that they might be backing away a little bit from their analytics orientation for player performance related issues, but then that was that rumor was hastily denied, and the feeling was, yes, it's still very important, but we do consider other factors as well. And I think, you know, now that everybody has some degree of analytics in Major League Baseball, for example, that most teams feel that it's an important factor, but you have to be incredibly innovative and investing a lot of capability to really get an edge, since everybody has at least some analytics. So it's a reasonable thing to try to look a little bit more at other more subjective kinds of factors than just, you know, being very, very data minded.
Well, that brings up the question of payback, ROI. Are teams or organizations finding that ROI, whether it's through additional revenue, better branding, better TV ratings, what have you?
I think there is a lot of ROI, and particularly in applications like ticket pricing and loyalty-oriented programs. Season ticket holders tend to get a lot of attention from an analytics perspective, both understanding what makes them even more loyal, and buying more merchandise and so on, and also what prevents their attrition. What are the factors that might predict attrition for season ticket holders, and how can you head that off? In general, there's nothing like a really winning team to boost revenues, and so if you're an owner or a general manager, you do have to calculate, what's the respective value of a big investment in analytics versus, buying that superstar player or that player that you hope is going to be a superstar. And so it's a little bit tougher investment. And the other thing to keep in mind is that these teams are, for the most part, pretty small businesses. I once calculated that the average NFL team has about the same worth, the overall value of the team, as the company that was at the very bottom of the Fortune 500. That suggests that they're probably not going to have a huge number of resources. Now, some teams are much wealthier than others. The New York Yankees, at one point, I was told this by Billy Bean, I never independently verified it, had 29 people on their analytics staff. So that's bigger than many companies, of course, but then they're a pretty wealthy team, unfortunately.
Some of our listeners would kill for that type, that size staff.
Exactly.
Let's take it a step higher, though, away from the team, and look at the individual sports that are doing their own analytics, both on field and on the business side. You have the NFL as a entity that's returned $220 million last year in shared revenue. You got NASCAR that seems to have analytics data on everything. And now we come into the Olympics, where I assume there'll be, you know, equal emphasis on data. Are they being successful or are they being innovative?
The Olympics in particular, you mean?
Or the leagues, let's say the leagues in general.
You
know, pro, college.
Yeah,
amateur,
I mean,
whatever.
There's clearly a sort of a segmentation that takes place. Major League Baseball was one of the earliest adopters of player performance data because there is so much individual performance data. That remains the case. Basically, everybody, there may be one or two teams that don't have a full-time analytics person, but basically every team does it now. And they also are highly motivated to have business analytics just because they have lots and lots of games. You know, they may have home games in the 80s per year, whereas an NFL team might have only 10 home games a year. So they're highly motivated to get as much money as possible out of all of those games, and to, you know, get ticket revenues that are commensurate with that many games. So they tend to be on the top. I think probably the NBA is second in terms of overall sophistication. Certainly on the player performance side, there's been a lot of improvement in that area over the past decade. A little bit less so probably on the business side. The NFL is probably third in sophistication on the player performance side, but a little bit more sophisticated on average, I think, than the on the business side than the NBA. And then you have down from there, the National Hockey League, who knows why, has not been terribly sophisticated in terms of its analytics. Major League Soccer has been somewhat sophisticated, but, you know, all the teams are owned by the league. So that, I think, means that they can make some decisions at the league level, like putting in sensors in every player's jersey and so on about their on-field location. But on the other hand, it kind of limits innovation when, you know, everybody's owned by the same company, so to speak. And then college is getting more analytical, but certainly not at the level of the pros. And you hear some examples. I was at the MIT Sports Analytics Conference last year, and there were some sessions about high school sports starting to become more analytical. So there definitely is a trickle-down effect, but you know, the fact that you have so much money in the major league sports means that that's likely to be and stay ahead for a while.
Let's look at the fans for a second. Now, over the past year or so, there seems to be kind of an emphasis, or at least some innovation, in improving the in-stadium as well as the broadcast experience for fans. Now, first we had Wi-Fi being made more available, and then feeding data, you know, performance data, team stats, and the like, over that Wi-Fi to the stadium fans. Is that becoming standard practice, or is it still kind of an aberration? I know the San Francisco stadiums were among the first to get publicity about this.
They were both the Giants and now the 49ers with this new stadium in Silicon Valley. Of course, you know, they would need to sort of parade their capabilities, being the capital of tech. But I think it's growing, and there is both the television fan experience that is becoming much more analytical, and you're getting lots more statistics on player performance being discussed all the time on television, and, as you say, in the arena itself. And you know, part of the issue is if you don't tend to have a very strong team right now, you try to amuse fans in any way possible. The Orlando Magic admitted, some of their analytics staff admitted to me that, you know, our team hasn't been that great, but we've done a fantastic job at keeping our attendance up because we are very aggressive about the use of analytics and data for fan engagement. And, you know, this has been pretty primitive in the past. And so they even, now that they have Wi-Fi in their arena, they can tell how many people are really paying attention when the T-shirt gun comes out. And it may well be that the T-shirt gun, I know this will be heretical for some people, is not necessarily the most entertaining experience that you could possibly have during timeouts and so on. So they can evaluate exactly what is a good on-field or on-court experience based on what kind of activity are people pursuing on their mobile phones.
I know I did notice a couple years ago that the T-shirt gun is a cute thing, but if you're in the balcony, you have absolutely no chance.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not sure that the return on investment is all that high for somebody paying the tickets that you have to pay these days, even if you a small chance you actually get a T-shirt.
Now, those people who want data while they're at the game, do you think they're the exception? You know, the people who have a financial interest in fantasy sports, or do you think most people want it?
Well, you know, I think fantasy sports have certainly driven a rapid increase in the interest in statistics, but you know, the way that the data is actually presented at the game is not that conducive to figuring out how your fantasy team is doing. So all you can really do for that is use Wi-Fi and, you know, go to some site that, that lists all of your players and how they might be performing that, that day or night. But it's probably, you know, motivated more of this, and you see it in all sports, even in golf, which I think is not one of the most data-oriented sports. The PGA Tour classifies every shot made in every tournament, and you it's mostly for to try to engage fans more. Golf is a somewhat slow-moving sport, and so presenting data on how different players are doing can increase TV engagement. So that's what they're focused on.
Well, if you had caddies keep their logs on iPads, they could probably do that pretty quickly.
There you go.
Now
I think they use volunteers because I guess the caddies are expected to be advising the player and giving them the right club and so on. But you could probably save some money eventually by using caddies. Or, you know, just putting sensors on all the balls. I suspect that will be the case at some point.
Now, Tom, one thing we hear a lot in the wake of shows like this is a common question. That is, how do I get into this area of analytics? So where are sports organizations finding their analytics talent? And if somebody in the audience wants to get into it, any advice for them?
Yes, my advice is don't do it. Because it's one of those areas, you know, like going to Hollywood and becoming a movie director or whatever. It's one of those areas where there are lots more people doing the wanting jobs in this space than there are jobs available. So I assume this is still the case. Daryl Morey, who is the general manager of the Houston Rockets, a guy I've known for a long time, believe it or not, was an expert on knowledge management in his youth, told me that if you want a job in sports analytics for the Houston Rockets, which is historically one of the most aggressive teams in the NBA, Daryl Morey is the co-chairman of the MIT Sports Analytics Conference, after all, you have to work for 2 years without pay before you're even considered for a full-time job. So if you want money in your career, you might want to think carefully about whether it's a good idea to get into sports analytics. And some of my other friends who do it, for example, for professional football teams, say, you know, the coaches just don't pay that much attention. It's kind of, it's like working for a company where the CEO has no interest in analytics at all. So he says, you know, I sometimes feel like banging my head on the wall. So it can be, I think, a difficult area. And unless you have a fantastic amount of passion and are willing to suffer a bit, I would not recommend it as a career.
Well, that could be discouraging to at least one person who posted in the text chat that he's been a student of yours at Columbia. So that you may have cut short that career.
Sorry about that. I think I'm doing you a favor if you if you avoid that profession.
Tom, we're approaching the bottom of the hour. Final question for me is, knowing that you're a sports fan, a lot of fans don't like the idea of analytics. Are analytics good for sports today or being overdone?
I think that it's, you know, anything that helps decision making is a good idea, but it does, I think, analytical capabilities proliferate pretty rapidly among teams, and it does become hard to get a competitive edge when everybody does it. So, you know, again, I think, you know, the most innovative teams will continue to invest and innovate, and they'll continue to do well. I mean, another team you may like as well, being from New Hampshire, is the New England Patriots, and they just keep on, you know, addressing new frontiers. If we can't innovate in one way, we'll deflate the footballs a little bit, and maybe that will do the trick.
Never happened.
But I hope that's not a painful issue to bring up for you, Jim. It does become hard when everybody does it. But I think it's engaged fans in a big way. You know, the combination of all this data and all these fantasy teams and so on have been a big factor in propelling the growth of professional sports in our society. You know, assuming you think that's a good thing, then analytics have helped to do it.
So I know you have a new book coming out, Only Humans Need Apply. What's it about and where can somebody find it?
It can be pre-ordered on Amazon, still coming out in a couple of months, but I love people to pre-order it if they're so inclined. And it's about sort of what I consider the next step in analytics, these cognitive technologies that are making all sorts of decisions on their own now, and kind of what's the role of humans. So the subtitle is Winners and Losers in the Age of Smart Machines. And if you want to be a winner and, you know, keep a job and figure out what you can do to add value to these machines, I think it's just the ticket.
Okay. Tom, this has been great. In a moment, we're going to move this discussion to the chat board for a few minutes. I encourage audience members to stay with us on the discussion board and to share more of your comments and questions. I want to thank our guest, Tom Davenport, for being with us today. And thanks to our sponsor, SAS, and to all of you for being with us as well. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you in just a moment on the chat, and I hope everyone has a great day. And again, thanks to you, Tom.
My pleasure.